My name is Atia. I am a grateful member of Overeaters Anonymous and grateful to be your keynote speaker this evening. I have been in OA for close to 15 years now, and I still am on fire for recovery. The fact that I am speaking on a Friday night in a different time zone is indicative of my life in recovery, because on my own, this isn't something that I would be able to do, let alone choose to do it. I'm going to start by telling you a little bit of my story, and then I want to get into how important the spiritual principles have become for me in the past six or seven years. So as far as I know, I was born a compulsive eater. I used to say that when I told my story years ago, and then my mom gave me some information that helped me to confirm that. She told me that when I was 2 and 3, she used to pop chewing gum in my mouth to calm me down. And so I know that since 2 or 3, I've had food or other substances in an effort to regulate my emotions. I grew up as a fairly normal looking child. I was probably a little chubby, but pretty much in keeping with the way other kids looked. And yet, in addition to the behaviors that I exhibited, when, as I shared earlier with my mom, popping chewing gum in my mouth, I believe my first binge was when I was 7 years old. And I still remember my mom was going out on a date after she and my father separated, and she allowed my sister and I to put together our own Easter baskets, and I ended up binging on the candy. I also recall when I was in either, I think it might have been first grade, and my mother sent me to school without enough food in my stomach, and I passed out. And I believe she did that because I was a little bit heavy and she wanted me to scale back a little bit on what I was eating. I also have other memories of going over to friends' homes, being invited for dinner or even just for snacks, and never being able to eat an appropriate amount, always looking for more food, asking for more food. And at that age, I didn't know that it wasn't socially appropriate. And so I would continue to ask for more. When I was 9 years old, I went to live in Nigeria for a year with my aunt and my cousin and my sister. And that was the first time that I recall eating so much that I actually threw up. And the other memory from my pretty early childhood that I'll share about now is when I was 14 years old, my father passed away. And that was really the start of the excess weight that I carried on my body. I had the behaviors that would enable me to sit in these rooms, but until then, you really couldn't tell. When my dad died when I was 14, I gained 70 pounds in a summer between my eighth grade year and going into high school, and went from wearing like a normal kid size to needing to wear a woman's size. And that was the start of my carrying around this extra weight. It was also the start of my depression and a number of other acting outs that I'll share about momentarily. And the weight pretty much stayed on me until I found all of you. I started smoking in high school. I started drinking in high school. Because of our ages, we didn't drink as much, but I smoked quite a bit. I was chain smoking. And there were times when I used cigarettes to try to decrease my appetite as I tried to starve myself. Unfortunately, to my great dismay, I was never able to really stop eating long enough for anything to affect the way that I looked. It just got me sick. And when I was 17, I met someone who I became friends with, and we went out one day to like a local diner or something, and she introduced me to the concept of bulimia, and she said that we could eat what we wanted to and we could get rid of it. And my head was already so sick that I thought, oh my gosh, this is the answer. I knew I couldn't stop eating, but the idea of being able to get rid of it afterwards had never occurred to me. And yet when I heard it, I was like, oh, ta-da, this is it. This is my solution. And I was an active bulimic for many years until I went to a special therapist and had that behavior arrested. And there were other times of me acting out with alcohol, acting out sexually, acting out. I would lie, I would steal, I would cheat. A lot of dishonest behavior. And that was throughout most of my childhood, my high school years, going into college. And an example of my dishonesty, really early on, I was in parochial school, and the first time I got caught cheating on an exam or a test at that time, I got caught the first time I cheated. And if I wasn't already somewhat distorted in my thinking, I might have thought, okay, I got caught cheating, don't cheat again. And instead, I just learned how to become a more sophisticated cheater. And so I cheated my way through high school. I went on to college and had a lot of difficulty with relationships. I was really emotionally immature. I imagine, knowing what I do from recovery, that my emotional growth is probably pretty stunted back when I was, you know, I don't know, 2 or 3, but somewhere back then. And so I had difficulty with relationships right up through the time that I came into the rooms, and college was no exception. And I actually was talking to one of my best friends earlier today, and she is going to see a soccer game at Hobart, she said. And I said, it's Hobart and William Smith. And I said, and I remember that. I said, that's actually where I lost my virginity. That was my first year, in my freshman year in college, and I was drinking at the time. So I had a lot of painful interactions before I came into the rooms and started to learn how to respect myself. And I learned that if I respected myself, then other people would respect me. And in terms of my weight, even with the bulimia, I was still fat. I was a fat bulimic. I stopped eating meat when I was in high school, and I was a fat vegetarian. I discovered vegan sugar, which is just as sweet as other sugar. And I could not stop eating. And so I would sort of yo-yo diet. I was a fat yo-yo. I would just sort of move up and down from like fat to fatter, and never really was able to get the weight off. And all of this continued, my overeating, my overdrinking, my overspending, my taking people for hostage in my relationships, all of this continued until I came to all of you. And what happened was, I went to Mexico the summer before I came into recovery. I remember before I went for 6 weeks to learn how to speak Spanish. And before I went, I was so excited about the idea of being in a place where I thought I would lose weight, as if they didn't have food in Mexico. And unfortunately, they do have food in Mexico. And I learned that I can binge on food in Mexico as well as I can binge on food here in the States. And unfortunately, I took myself with me. And so I didn't lose the weight that I thought that I would. And most of my adult life, my weight was around 220, 230. My highest weight that I'm aware of was 268 pounds. And that was when I was coming out of school. And then I got to this place after I came back from Mexico, and I went from being around 220, and I found this book, not an OA book, and it talked about sugar being like this culprit and gave me this like weaning off of sugar. And following this program, while I was supposed to be weaning off of sugar, I actually gained weight. And so I went from around 220 until I found you all in November of that year, and I was up to 240. So I was headed up in my weight once again. And I imagine that that pattern would have continued throughout the rest of my life if I hadn't found OA. Thanksgiving Day 2006, I got into a shouting match with my sister. I felt that that holiday was an appropriate time to tell her I didn't like the way that she and her husband were raising their children. And I had one of my first spiritual awakenings in recovery. When they went home, I realized that I was still binging and that I needed help. And so I went online, and as I mentioned before, I'd gone into therapy to have the bulimia arrested, and I didn't want to pay for therapy again. I didn't really want to spend a lot of time going to driving from work to the therapist. And so I was just sort of looking online to see what I could find, maybe some kind of group or something. And I found all of you, and I found the website, and thank you all for continuing to give Seventh Tradition, because if it wasn't for Seventh Tradition, there would not be a website for me to find, and I would not be sitting here today. I am grateful for the person who answered the call when I called about the first meeting that I went to, which was a Tuesday night meeting, and he offered to give me directions, and I went the Tuesday after Thanksgiving. I left that meeting, went home, and did what I typically did when I was afraid, which was I ate. I'm sure I'm not alone in that. And the following week, I went back to a Tuesday night meeting, and I heard more wonderful stuff. At my very first meeting, I heard pretty much there is a solution, and it's spiritual, and keep coming back. At my second meeting, I met the woman who would eventually become my first sponsor. And I still did what I used to do, which was I left that meeting and I went home and I binged. And then the next night, Wednesday night, I went to my third meeting, and this was December 6th of 2006. And I have receipts to show that I binged on my way to that meeting. And that was my last binge. And in my early years, I would say, if I had known that that was going to be my last binge, I would have eaten something else, because I didn't have like my favorite foods. And I'd had so many last suppers in my life, and I would have chosen something different. But it happens when it happens. And I'm grateful. And I've been gratefully abstinent since that time. I used to celebrate my anniversary on the day that I woke up, which was the next morning. I woke up abstinent for the first time. And I called that woman who I asked to be my sponsor and told her that I was abstinent and asked if she would help me. And one of the very first lessons that she taught me was that my recovery is my responsibility, her recovery is her responsibility. And she agreed to work with me, and we were working the steps together for the first 8 months of my recovery. And I am grateful that all these years later, she is still part of my life, and both of us are still recovering together. I took about, I would say, probably a year and a half, maybe 2 years to have the weight release, to to the point where I am now. I have been in a healthy body weight for about 13 years now, and I'm grateful for that. As I said before, I haven't binged since that night. And yet, I came here not really to lose weight. I had just bought a new wardrobe. I came here because I needed help with relationships. I was in desperate need of a spiritual solution and didn't know it. And as wonderful as it is to be in a healthy body, as wonderful as it is to be healthy, what keeps me coming back is the spiritual solution. So I'm going to share a little bit about my spiritual journey in recovery. I'll give a little bit of background. As far as I can recall, I've always believed in God. I was baptized as a small infant. I used to go to church, even without my parents. Sometimes I'd go with a babysitter. I went to parochial school, which I said before. I converted to a religion. I would go to Bible study. I had social groups around my religion. So I was pretty steeped in and very much what I would have identified as a believer. I don't remember time not believing in God. And yet when I started working the steps, I very slowly began to realize that although I always believed in God, I never obeyed God. And that's the language that I would have used at the time. And the reason why I didn't obey God was because I didn't trust God. And I didn't trust God because I believed that although God was love, God was also punishing. And that if I didn't do certain things, that I was going to go to hell. And that was a very, very bad place to be. And so I had a lot of fear embedded in my relationship with God. And one of the first freedoms that I got from my sponsor was when she told me that I could choose essentially my beliefs. I could decide, you know, sort of what I wanted to believe in. And coming from my religious background, that was not a possibility. I didn't get to choose what I believed in. It just, these are the beliefs. And so just hearing that I could choose something different was a wonderful freedom and took away a lot of the fear of something happening to me if I didn't believe a certain thing. And over time, it took a while. I think it was probably the second time that I was working through the steps. I still had some fear around my relationship, and I was doing service work, and I was reading about Tradition 2, which was helping me with my service work, but what it was also doing was helping me with my relationship and or my concept of God. And reading Tradition 2 about it being a loving God, a loving higher power, started to help reduce some of that fear that I'd had in that relationship for so long. And over time, I got to a point where I no longer had this fear, but it also freed me from a lot of the beliefs that I had about God. I used to refer to God as a male. I used to see God as a human, and my spiritual beliefs changed, and they did so in this really amazing way. And I ended up having a relationship with a goddess, and that was my higher power for a very long time. And some of the ways that I would connect with my higher power, in addition to prayer and meditation, is I would sing to my higher power. And I have this friend in recovery who is very creative, and she would invite us to these events, and there would be all these different songs and such. And so I took all of these songs and would change them. Sometimes I would change the words to make it more appropriate for me and my higher power. And I had this love affair with my higher power. One summer, I went to the beach, and this was with someone in recovery whose parents had a beach house. And at the end of the summer, it was like in August, and I was sitting in the water, and it was this very, very, very light rocking was going on. And I just felt held by my higher power. And I had this relationship that went from, heard someone describe it, she described herself as a brick person, as if she had to be knocked upside down her head. And what I realized was that my higher power didn't want me to be a brick person. She wanted me to be a feather person. And my higher power was trying to get me to see that I deserve gentleness, and was trying to get me to understand that I could give gentleness, that it wasn't just a one-way thing, that I could, that I was gentle, that I deserve gentleness, that I could be gentle with other people. And so I had this amazing relationship with my higher power. And that relationship was there even when I didn't trust myself. And I had this conversation with my higher power once, and it was during a retreat. And I was dealing with some of my fears, and I said to my higher power, I'm so afraid that, like, I trust you, but I'm so afraid that I'm going to do something to screw it up. Like, I'm going to run away from you and go back to some of my old self-destructive ways. And my higher power said to me, if you run away, I'm going to run away with you, so you don't have to worry about it. And that was the relationship that I needed, and that sustained me for a long time in my recovery. I've done some really amazing things through service. I traveled. I'm in the Region 8, the Southeast region, and we have the Southeast of the United States, but we also encompass Central and South America. So I've gone to Medellin, Colombia for service. I've gone to Brazil for service. And I love service, and I love to travel, and I love to get to travel and carry the message of recovery. And there were times, and I haven't traveled for OA service. I mean, I don't even go to in-person OA meetings now because of the pandemic, but I used to love standing at the podium and talk about how excited I was that I get to travel and stand here in front of people and share, because I used to throw up and, you know, eat out of garbage cans. So I love this life, and I love what recovery continues to bring into my life. So I want to go back to this relationship I had with my higher power. And as I said, I heard at my first meeting that this is a spiritual program of recovery. It's not a religious program. It's a spiritual one. And there are many places in the big book where it talks about the fact that we have to grow along spiritual lines. And I was very committed to my daily prayer and meditation. I went to a religious spiritual community where we would meditate. I was part of the meditation team. And I really spent a lot of time growing the spiritual life that I had. And one day, my higher power came to me and said that it was time for me to release my concept of her. And I felt really sad, but I also knew that she was right, because my beliefs had changed. And I no longer had the same belief that I had earlier on in my recovery. And so I released my concept of her. And this was the start of the spiritual principles becoming really important to me. And so grateful that our latest OA 12 and 12 has the spiritual principles of each of the steps listed. And then and we also have the principles for the traditions listed. And then the concepts, the 12 concepts of service also have spiritual principles. And if you don't have them, you can go online and look up OA 12 concepts, spiritual principles, and you come to this page that has all the spiritual principles listed. So when I let go of this concept of a higher power, I talked to other people who I had heard in the rooms who had what they would identify as non-traditional spiritual paths. Some of them may have identified as agnostic, some may have identified as atheist, some may have identified as, you know, may not have identified, and that was fine. I basically was looking to understand what language to use now that I no longer had the same beliefs. And just to be clear, this was a journey of around, I would say, 6 or 7 years. So this wasn't me coming in. And I could have, like, you could not have paid me enough money to stop believing in God. Like, there's no way that I would have stopped believing in God. And yet, I stopped believing in God. It just happened. It wasn't anything that I did by design. And I still don't. I've tried to. I know that belief is a choice that I've tried to make myself believe. I don't believe the way that I used to, unfortunately. But I knew that the spiritual principles were important to me. I needed to continue to work the 12 steps because almost 15 years in, I can tell you, if you're waiting for the disease to suddenly disappear, 15 years in, it hasn't disappeared. I still get to keep coming back and get to keep working the steps. And I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that I still get to call my sponsor every day, not the same sponsor, but I've had my current sponsor for over 14 years now. So I started, like I said, talking to different people. I've been in the habit of reading from the big book every day for most of my recovery. And so there were passages in the big book that really spoke to this idea of not having the belief that I used to have. And it talks about the spiritual principles. And so the spiritual principles took on this new importance to me because that was how I was going to make the leap from believing in God and believing in a higher power to this transition of not believing in God and not believing in a higher power and still being able to recover, which I've done now for about 7 years. And what I did, and I'll give an example, was I would use the spiritual principles. So one of the spiritual principles that has been important to me throughout my recovery has been the principle of love. Another one is kindness, which is not one of our official spiritual principles, but it's those two, love and kindness, have been part of my recovery journey from the beginning. And so something that I could, if I was unclear what direction to take, I could ask myself, well, what would love do? What would love do in this situation? Another example is surrender, which is a very important spiritual principle, even though it's not listed, although it could be, it might be listed under one of the traditions or one of the concepts. I'm not sure. But surrender is so vital to my recovery. And so I get to practice surrender by picking up the phone to call my sponsor every day. Even the days that I don't want to, even when I don't feel like it, even when I don't want to listen to her, even when I don't want to hear her. She's not a morning person. She lives in a different time zone from me. And I call her and she's usually pretty cranky in the morning. But I do that because I'm practicing surrender. So those are just two very small examples of how I can use the spiritual principles in order to continue to recover. And I am grateful that there have been other people who have come in and shared their spiritual journey, because until I was in this place where I had different beliefs, I can imagine that I was probably pretty annoying to other people who believed differently, because my sponsor has this phrase, spiritual superiority. I had this sense that, like, you know, keep coming back, and one day you'll believe like I do. And that's not necessary. And fortunately, that's not the case. Fortunately, because my beliefs changed, I'm probably more open-minded now than I was when I came in. And so I'm grateful for that. I want to share some gratitude. I did not start out as your Friday night speaker. I initially asked to speak tomorrow because I'm on the East Coast and there's a 3-hour difference, and I tend to fall asleep pretty early on Friday. Unfortunately, I realized that I had double booked myself. I had signed up to do service and I had asked to speak on Saturday. And for whatever reason, I did not see on my calendar that I had a very important date. I love Carole King, and I learned about her, the musical of her life that was on Broadway years ago, and I wanted to go see it. And then it came here, and I think I was doing OA service when it came. I'm in Durham, North Carolina. I think I was doing OA service when it came, and so I didn't get to see it. And then one day I was driving, and I saw that it was coming back. I was going to the beach, and then I found it here locally. And then the pandemic hit, and so it was postponed. And so I've been waiting for about 5 years to go and see Beautiful. And I'm sharing about this not only because, A, I'm still human, I still make mistakes, and I didn't panic. I just said, I made this mistake, and is it possible for me to switch with someone else? And someone else, the Friday night speaker, was kind enough to do so. But one of the songs that I'm likely to hear tomorrow is called Beautiful. And it takes me back to when I was in relationship with this higher power, because that was one of the things that I would sing about with my higher power. And many of us in recovery probably have had issues with our self-esteem. Some of us may identify as having had no self-esteem or low self-esteem. And some of us may have had sponsors or other OA fellows encourage us to look in the mirror and say that we love ourselves, or to say something kind to ourselves. And I used to, after I would sing to my higher power, I would go and look at myself in the mirror and I would sing to myself. And so this song, Beautiful, is one of the songs that I would sing to myself or sing in connection with my higher power. There are other songs with beautiful in the title or in the lyrics that I would also sing, because the word beautiful has become an important part of my recovery. And for several years now, I have wished people a beautiful day in recovery. And it's not about being happy, it's about being grateful and loving life and recognizing that life is limited. So I'm probably near the end, so I'm going to share a little bit more about some of the experiences that I've had in the spirit of hope. As I said, I've been abstinent since December 6th of 2006, and I've done a lot of traveling, and travel was really difficult for me. There was a time in my recovery where I would weigh my food And I then went to a place where I stopped weighing my food, and it took me a long time to break the habit of the food scale. And yet when I traveled, I realized that I needed to be really black and white with my food. And so that was something that I did to take care of myself, even when traveling for OA service could be really challenging. When I went to Brazil, I found a way to contact my sponsor through the computer so that I could still contact her every day, because that was what I needed to do to take care of myself when I was traveling. I've had a few short-term relationships in recovery. And then about a little over 7 years ago, I met the love of my life, and I've been in relationship now for over 7 years. And this has been 4 years into it. That was my longest relationship. And so I have learned how to have relationships. I have learned how to treat myself with respect, and he treats me with respect. I had my mom died in recovery. And just as I'm saying all of these things, this is me learning how to live life on life terms without using food. And there's no way that I ever thought that I could have my mom die and me not have to go and check myself into a mental institution, let alone be able to do it with raw, honest emotion and without food. So that was something else you all taught me. Just over a week ago, I had a pain in the morning, right after my breakfast, and I thought it was gas, and it was a little bothersome, but I didn't think too much of it. And then towards the middle of the day, I asked my partner if he would bring me some Gas-X, because I thought it was gas. And I took it and the pain got worse. And then I called him and said that I needed help. And he actually diagnosed me as it being my appendix. And I had my appendix taken out on Wednesday night, last Wednesday. And that night I was up, able to go to the bathroom. And 2 days later, I was back to my walking. I was told that I could do my walking. And I know that I would not have been able to do that if I was not a healthy body weight, if I wasn't accustomed to taking care of myself the way that you all have taught me. Even though when my dad died, I said before that I started the depression that I had probably for about 20 years, I was never suicidal until my partner and I were going to couples therapy a couple of years ago, and I had some childhood memories that had come up, and we were trying to work through them. And we had this really painful session, and I had suicidal thoughts for the first time. And for history, I guess it was about 10 years in recovery, I had really severe insomnia. And so I finally went to see a psychiatrist. And then when I had the suicidal thoughts, I was placed on antidepressants. And I'm sharing about this because years ago, when I first came into the rooms, there was someone who was in one of my meetings who talked about taking an antipsychotic medicine. And I immediately had this flash as if she was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or something, and had this stay away from me type of feeling. And so I made a commitment to myself as an amend that I was going to continue to tell people that I see a psychiatrist and that I have a therapist and I'm in two fellowships, because that's what I need in order to be semi-functional in the world, and to help to decrease the stigma of that. And when I was in Brazil, I remember there was this wonderful woman who served as my translator. They were so sweet. They had her stay in my hotel room with me so that no matter where I went, I always had someone to translate for me. And we stayed in touch, and she was someone who needed to take meds. And she had a lot of shame about it. And I was able to show her in the big book where it talks about how we make use of doctors and help her to understand that there's no shame in getting help. And so I'm grateful for that. I just want to say thank you to everyone. I hope that you hear something, not necessarily from me, but something this weekend that encourages you to keep coming back. It is so vital for us to keep coming back together. So thank you for letting me share. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Atiya. Thank you for such a beautiful share. Our meeting is now open for questions. I will pose a question myself. Atiya, I heard you use the phrase practice surrender, and you talked about that you're calling your sponsor every day is practicing surrender. I wonder if you have any other ways to practice surrender.
The big one for me, I mentioned that I had insomnia for about 10 years. And so I would make myself get up. I'd wake up in the morning, I'd do my prayer meditation. And then all I'd want to do was like curse and cry and scream because I'd had insomnia. And I would get up and I would go in to the gym. And so the big surrender for me is doing what I don't want to do and not doing what I want to do. And like 90% of the time, if I follow that, I'm within where I need to be.
Thank you. Here's a question. What was or is the hardest spiritual principle of the program for you to follow? And how do you work toward that principle when it is not easy?
Of course, I laughed. I feel like my sponsor found you. The hardest spiritual principle for me is always honesty. I do dishonesty so easily. And so it's one that I have to keep going back to. And it just happened today where I was doing something and I was like, this is a good time to call my sponsor. And I called my sponsor and I said, this is what's going on. And I said, and my dishonesty is always so layered. It's like my dishonesty is always so complex. You know, people talk about cash register honesty. Mine is like matrix dishonesty. Like I just have these layers. And it's just because that's how I am wired. And I spent so much of my life in dishonesty that I really have to pay attention. And I, most of the time, know that by doing so, it's better for my life to practice honesty than it is to practice dishonesty, even though it's so much easier to practice dishonesty. So that's my most difficult one. And having my sponsor is really key because that's who, if I don't tell anyone else, I'm telling my sponsor. I remember once I called my sponsor and I told her something, I don't remember exactly what it was. And then all of a sudden, the voicemail erased. And I was like, yes. And then I went back and I told her again anyway. But like, there's that feeling of like not wanting to share, not wanting to tell. And so I have to keep doing it because I don't want to go back to living in fear and shame, which is how I used to live. So thanks for that question.
Thank you. We have the question asking Tahira to share about step 11.
So I've already shared about my ever-evolving spiritual beliefs. And to be really clear about that, there's this saying that I learned early in recovery, which is hold on loosely, let go gently. So my spiritual beliefs might change again tomorrow because they continue to evolve. I mentioned about my partner. We went through a really difficult time and I moved back to my apartment for some time. And when I did, I asked a friend who was also in AA if she would help me. And she said, yes, what she wanted me to do. And I said to her, I said, I'll do anything you want me to do. Anything you ask me to do, I'm going to do it. She knew that I didn't believe in God. And so she said, but this is what I want you to do. And I hadn't prayed, I meditated, but I hadn't been praying for like 4 or 5 years, whatever. And I said, I'll do whatever. So one of the things that she asked me to do was to start reading the 11-step prayer. It's also called the Prayer of St. Francis, it's called the Peace Prayer. And so that really, if you could put that up again, I would appreciate it. Perfect. So this is from the AA 12 and 12, and it's step 11. And what I started to do, and this was from, I think I started this in 2019. And so I started reading it. And so you can see the first word in the book is Lord, and I changed it to love to make it something that I could believe in. So love makes me a channel of peace. So I went through and I did that. Okay, so I started doing this because she told me to do it every day. So every day, and when I do my readings twice. So every day I go through and I would say this prayer, I would do this reading and I would go through, and you can see some of my markings there. So then one day I was telling her, my friend, that my partner and I was still having so much problem. And so she said, well, do it for the both of you. So instead of just saying love makes me, I started saying love makes us a channel of peace. So then when I was going through, I would do it in the plural for my, thinking of my partner and I. And so I would think of him and I would, you know, think of, and then I would say it and I would go through. Okay. And so that lasted, let's say, a couple of months. And then, and you can see there are like little dates around. Suddenly I had this awareness. I was like, wait a second, there's nothing in this about fear. Where is the fear? Because I know for myself, I was always dealing with fear. So that's what I have on the bottom. Where there is fear, we bring courage, kindness, compassion, gentleness. And that's, I have gentleness there, but I say courage, compassion, kindness, gentleness, and now hope. And then there at the top, which just came up this year, where there is pain, and I bring validation. So I have all of these things that have, and again, this is my evolving spirituality, because I'm saying the same thing every day. And then over time, I'm having more questions coming. Well, what about where there's anger? How do I respond to anger? All right, what about where there's pain? How do I respond to pain? What about where there is blame? How do I respond to blame? I respond to blame with neutrality, which is actually one of our spiritual principles, and understanding. So that's how I have used this. And I encourage you, I have throughout my big book, even the very first time I read it, my sponsor said, go through and cross out alcohol and alcoholic and put in. So I have sugar or binge food or different things. And this is enabling me to meet myself where I am. And so if you feel like the language of the big book or of the 12 and 12 doesn't really match your experience, I encourage you to change the word so that it does, because what's most important is that we continue to recover and have spiritual experiences. And so this is one of the ways that I do that. So thanks for asking.
Thank you, Atiya. Annie F. asks the question, what's your action plan? And if and when you travel, how does it change?
I don't know that I officially say that I have an action plan. I'm really clear with all the other tools. And I think it's because I was using the tools and then action plan came around afterwards. But sometimes when I tell my sponsor what I do, she's like, that sounds like an action plan. So I'll just share what I do. I wake up in the morning and I do my meditation, and then I get dressed and I go out and I walk. And while I'm walking, I am usually doing my readings. I only started walking because of the pandemic. Before that, I would go to the gym. So I would read my readings while I was on like the elliptical or something. now the gyms aren't shut down, but when the gym shut down, I started walking. So I did something that I didn't want to do, but I now love it. And then I also, I take sponsee calls, I call my sponsor and I talk to other people. So that's part of my action plan. There was a time early in my recovery when I would go to the bathroom, because it was something I would do almost every hour. I would check in with myself and I would see, and I would check in with my higher power and see, how am I feeling? What were my most recent interactions like? Do I owe any amends? So checking in, connecting with my higher power is definitely considered. I would consider that part of an action plan. I have always in recovery prayed before I eat, even though I no longer pray. I do gratitude before I eat. I think those are like the main things that I would consider actions that I do. I now do twice daily meditation. So I do an afternoon meditation. After doing my morning meditation for close to 15 years now, that's really easy. My afternoon meditation is still almost like pulling teeth sometimes. And so the fact that I do it is part of my action plan. And when I travel, usually the timing of things are different, but I usually end up doing the same thing, much to my partner's dismay, because I don't ever want to take a vacation from my recovery. My recovery goes with me. So thanks for asking.
Thank you for that response. Next question. I love that your HP has evolved. Mine has too. Baby steps with learning to trust and rely on a power greater than me. Any suggestions to a newcomer where to begin with that?
I guess I would encourage anyone to begin wherever they are, which is where I had to start, which is, I think, really the only place where we can start. And I today would encourage gentleness, because, you know, even though I know in my heart that belief is a choice, I still can't really force myself to believe something. I can stay really open, I can create conditions, but I can't make myself believe something. And so I just have to trust. And that's such an important spiritual principle for me. I got to a point where what I trusted in was less important than the fact that I did trust. And so I go through life trusting today. What am I trusting in? I'm trusting in the 12 steps. I'm trusting in the process of recovery. I trust in love. I trust in beauty. I trust that the seasons are going to continue to rotate and such. So there's so many different ways to connect to whatever it is that you actually do believe in. I would encourage you to be gentle with yourself around the process. And while we're waiting for another question, if there is one, I want to say thank you. I saw at least two people from the East Coast who are on, and I don't know how they found out about it. I don't think I would be here if I wasn't actually speaking tonight, but I just want to give a shout out to the East Coast buds.
A member asked, what is your favorite tool and least favorite tool?
My favorite tool is the telephone. I use it to call my sponsor. I use it to call in meetings. The number of times, especially early in recovery, where I needed help and I picked up the phone and reached out and someone was there. So I love the tool of the telephone. I would say my least favorite tool, if I had to, would be anonymity, mainly because I think it's like the least understood. You know, I think it's more of a concept than something that is tangible like the other tools. So I think that that one is sort of difficult. And it's actually funny, I didn't say plan of eating, because for years I wouldn't even share about my plan of eating because I had fear and I had arrogance. So it's no longer plan of eating as my least favorite tool. Great question. Thank you.
Thank you. Another question With regards to your journey, you mentioned one day you woke up abstinent. Could you further explain what led to that change and what is abstinence for you?
Thank you for asking that very important question, because what I did not share was the steps that happened before I got there. So I said that I binged on the way to that meeting, that Wednesday night meeting. And I was sitting there and I was at the table at the meeting and I was crying, and someone asked me why I was crying. And I said, because I know that the only way that I can have this amazing life that you all tell me is possible is if I surrender my food to God at the time. And I said, and I don't want to, I'm afraid. And I had to do that. I had to make the intentional decision. I don't know how, I still don't know exactly how it happened. It's definitely a spiritual experience to surrender my food and to wake up abstinent, especially since I was, you know, quote unquote abstinent at other times in my life, because I didn't wake up in the morning with food in my mouth. And yet there was something fundamentally different, to the point where I celebrated my anniversary on that morning that I woke up, December 7th, for years, until I had a different reading in the big book that gave me a different interpretation, which again was another spiritual awakening. So what is abstinence for me? So there are foods that are like alcoholic foods to me, to my body, that I haven't had for almost 15 years now. There are certain behaviors I haven't binged. I haven't thrown up. I did when I was sick. I did last week when my appendix was coming out. So there's certain things that I don't do that I abstain from that would lead me to, I tell people, I'm like, I'm allergic to sugar. And they're like, oh, what happens? And I'm like, I blow up. Really? I do. I blow up and I become crazy. So I don't do that. And there was a time when, and like some people, and I used to, if sugar was listed in an ingredient like 5 or down, I'm just so particular these days. If I see an ingredient and it has sugar in it, I tend to stay away. I mean, there's some things that I can have that probably have a little bit, but I don't do caffeine. I don't do coffee. I don't do any kind of artificial or even natural like stevia. I had to give that up after my first year. All that stuff shows up in the same way in my body. I started chewing gum my first year, and I had to give it all up. So what is it? It's moderate or eliminate. And that's where that honesty comes in.
Thank you, Atiya, for speaking tonight. Let's close with the OA promise.